there, everybody. You are listening to This Show Is So Gay. I'm your host, Ken Schneck. This is episode number 263. As always, you can get in touch with us by dropping us a line, send an email on over to ken@thisshowissogay.com. Stroll on over to thisshowissogay.com to learn all about the fun things happening with our little gay radio show that could. You can follow us on Twitter. Just type in This Show Is So Gay. That would be our handle. And of course, go to the Facebook. Type in This Show Is So Gay. Like us, because we sure as heck like you. So much ground to cover on this week's show. We must get started with our first guest. Eric Pippenberg is the senior theater editor at the New York Times, having previously served as their senior web producer, coordinating all sorts of amazing pieces. His publication history includes pieces for Time Out New York, Chicago Reader, Windy City Times, and Out Magazine, just to name a few. He was a 2008 fellow for the USC Annenberg Getty Arts Journalism Program, and now he is here with us. Eric, welcome to This Show Is So Gay.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
How the heck are you doing, man?
I'm doing well. Thank you.
So you ruined the ending just off the air a few seconds ago. You apparently a Cleveland native.
I am. Technically, I'm from North Olmsted, so I'm a West Sider. I know Clevelanders, you know, there's this East Side, West Side thing, but I am a West Sider, and proudly so.
Okay, so I'm new to Cleveland, and this East Side, West Side thing is the dumbest thing I've ever encountered.
It is pretty dumb, isn't it? Yeah.
What do I need to know about Cleveland, my new homeland?
Well, you know, the thing is, even though there was this sort of East Side, West Side thing, I think Clevelanders are sort of united when it comes to people who maybe don't understand how sensitive Clevelanders are about how great the city is. I think there's a lot of self-deprecating people in Cleveland who are like, who would want to come to Cleveland, this whole, you know, mistake on the lake nonsense. But when anyone tries to sort of make fun of our city, watch out, because we will put up a fight. Because I think people who live in Cleveland or who have left Cleveland and still come back, like I do several times a year, realize just what a really, really great city is. But we need to sort of, Clevelanders need to sort of stop making fun of themselves, because they don't realize just what a great city it really is.
And not only do you still come back, but you're still crazy invested writing pieces about Cleveland. You recently wrote a piece about our thriving theater hub.
Yes, that's right. I do come back. I still have family in North Olmsted, and I come back several times a year. And yeah, you know, one of the things that I'm a Cleveland booster. So one of the things that I've been really happy to do here at the Times is sort of share that with the rest of the world. I wrote a piece about how Playhouse Square is sort of helping to revitalize that part of Cleveland with something unusual for a theater company, nonprofit theater company, which is creating a residential neighborhood. And someone like me who grew up in Cleveland in the 70s and 80s, the idea that people would actually be moving downtown was just kind of crazy. So I was like, you know, this is a really good opportunity for me to not only write about two things that I love, which are the theater and Cleveland, but, you know, to do it all at one time and sort of share with the rest of the world some really great things that Cleveland is doing. I just couldn't pass that up, and I wrote a hotel review. I have another piece coming out soon about another neighborhood, and I have another piece coming out in the travel section about the gay games. So yeah, anything I can do to sort of promote my hometown, I'm happy to do.
Well, it's fantastic, because my folks right there in New York City keep forwarding me your articles saying, hey, look, it's not that bad there. I said, I never said it was, but thank you. Thanks so much,
Mom
and Dad.
It's really not that bad there. Yeah,
it's really not. I like it. I like it. Now, let's talk about you. You as a writer. Now, you are just this string. We've had this amazing string of journalists on the show as of late. They all seem to write for their high school newspaper. Was that your background?
I went to Lutheran West High School in Rocky River, and we didn't have a school newspaper. So, but I was one of those drama club nerds.
Nice.
And so I think that's where my sort of English/drama club interest started, was there. It's a small school, and everything was about sports, and I was that kid who just really couldn't play sports to save my life, but I love to write and I love to be in drama clubs. So I think that's kind of where there was a little bit of a light bulb moment for me, which was like, you know, this is kind of the work that I want to pursue, is more journalism slash theater. I don't know. I was trying to figure it out, but it wasn't so much newspaper as it was just like reading and being in plays and you know, just that kind of experience growing up as a nerd, I guess.
Was there a pivotal point? Was there just that one moment where you said, you know what, I'm going to make a go of writing?
Yeah, you know, I think it was probably in college when I went to DePaul in Chicago, and I had some really, really great gay teachers who just sort of said, you know, you've got an ear for how to write. And I actually started my journalism career in broadcast TV at the NBC station in Chicago in the very, very early days of the web, where people were like, who's going to go to the internet for news? That's ridiculous. Who would ever do that? And it took two hours to update the homepage, you know, back in the early days. And, you know, just working in Chicago and broadcast news sort of eventually turned into more journalism, written journalism. But I mean, since I started as a journalist, I've been in the digital sort of web side of things. It's been like, God, I don't know, 20 years or so. And I'm glad to say that I was there when those days first started, and I'm still going. So
yeah, because I don't know if you know, people still using that web.
They are still getting news on the internet.
Who knew?
Yes.
Who knew?
Good
well,
for us.
I did a little bit of an Eric Pippenberg immersion where I was just reading all these different pieces, and I found myself thumbing through a number of pieces at Out Magazine, which, by the way, thumbing through Out Magazine from the kind of early mid-2000s, quite an experience if you haven't done that recently.
Yes, that's true. It was a very different time. What did you find that was sort of unusual?
So much fun reading it. I mean, first of all, yeah. I do think the prevalence, which is kind of interesting for me, as you know, as I come back now from the San Francisco to LA AIDS ride, just the prominence of the HIV meds ads is different. You know, I think that there's a lot more of those ads were combating stigma than right now, where they're just providing more of the medical information, which was kind of a nice evolution to see. I don't know. I've always had this conflicted relationship with Out Magazine and that balance between salacious and journalism. And they're kind of interesting in that way. And I don't know, mid-2000s, a little bit salacious for them.
Yeah, that's for sure. And now, as I think, you know, being gay has come into the mainstream, and coverage of HIV and AIDS issues has sort of not become as so much of a crisis anymore. You know, reading that magazine, which I haven't written for in a while, it's still sort of it's kind of a lifestyle magazine, much more so than maybe it had a little more of a political edge back then. But,
right.
You know, I guess that's progress in some ways and nothing to really complain about. I mean, the idea that we would be where we are and it would be reflected in a magazine like Out, for me growing up in the 80s is just mind-blowing. So, you know what, I'll take it.
Yeah, yeah. I think I still have a little bit of Out Magazine bitterness from when I thought, as an NYU student and I was interning there, I thought I was going to be writing original content and not working the Banana Republic opening in Chelsea. But, you know, we all have our journeys, Eric.
Well, you know, and the thing is that Banana Republic in Chelsea is still there, but there are so many things in Chelsea that aren't there anymore.
Oh,
Rainbows
gosh.
And Triangles, this card store where you could get gay cards and gay candles and gay towels and all kinds of gay things is gone. The Rawhide is gone.
Yeah.
I mean, when I first moved to New York, it was 1989, and I was here for a couple years, and the Chelsea of 1989 is gone today. It's kind of shocking. I mean, it's good that there's such, you know, New York changes and cities change, and that's a good thing. But to look back at what Chelsea was when I first moved to New York, it's
totally.
Again, it's just I can't even imagine that people would look back and say, wait, that's what Chelsea was like.
Oh yeah. The Big Cup. It's all about the Big
Cup.
Oh,
Big Cup. Don't get me started on Big Cup. The coffee was terrible, but the
oh, did they have coffee?
Was...
I had no idea. I didn't even know they had beverages. Our listeners across the country are like, yeah, it's delicious. All right, but I do want to talk about a couple of your pieces at Out Magazine that I was reading, and two in particular jumped out at me. And one, I know these were a number of years ago, but I feel like they're still fresh in your mind. One called Extreme Makeover, in which you wrote about kind of casual use of steroids and talked about your own background and growing up. And in there, you wrote this sentence: in a society where there is thin and thinner, even the most modest bulk stands out like a second penis. It's always difficult to pull one sentence and encapsulate the entire piece, but really quite an affecting piece in revealing yourself in the way that you did and also getting at the story.
Yeah, boy, you're taking me back. I sometimes do I've done Google searches on myself, and I was like, wait a minute, I wrote that story? So thank you for reminding me about that piece. Yeah, I mean, one of the things that I've always been interested when I write about myself, which is not that often. I mean, I'm a journalist. I do much better writing about other people than I do writing about myself, but has been about gay men and sort of body issues, weight issues.
Yeah.
And I was a fat kid, and once you're a fat 13-year-old, you're always a fat 13-year-old. And I'm 43 now, and I still sometimes look in the mirror, and I see that chubby 13-year-old kid who was struggling with his weight and struggling with being gay. And I, you know, that's something that always has fascinated me, is how gay men can really just sort of beat themselves up about how they look, even if by most standards they look great.
Right.
You know, there's still this sense of shame. And for me, body issues of gay men is an entire book. And in that piece, it was really interesting to sort of see what gay men will do to their bodies in the quest to look good. I think is a story that never ends and never gets old, no matter what decade you're talking about. That's
right.
Still going to be an issue for many gay men.
Yeah, that was one of those pieces where you were kind of looking at the publication date and hoping, well, gosh, that's out of date because that was 8-9 years ago. Totally not.
Totally not.
Yeah. So there's that. And then what I would assume, even up until now, up until working with the New York Times, was the crowning event of your journalism career, that one time when you went to a gay men's foot fetish party.
Yes.
I have to read this sentence because...
Oh, God, okay.
Because you really packed it all into this sentence. And you wrote, this concluded the article, you wrote, "Still, as foot fetishism continues to step out of the closet of shame, more and more people will realize that loving feet doesn't have to make you a heel, and that's a step in the right direction."
Oh, God, did I write that? Really?
See what you did there, Eric?
That is so un-Timesian. Can I just tell you, we tend not to write puns like that in the New York Times, but God bless our magazine. That's the way that you can write. You can write. You can say those kinds of things. Wow, I had forgotten that I wrote those words. So
did you remember the party?
I do sort of vaguely remember the – God, as I get older, my memory has just really, really gotten worse. I do remember that party, and, you know, I actually wrote and again, it might sound strange, but it's, again, another sort of body issue story that I wrote about for Out, which was this niche that I had there. I know I wrote about that party. I wrote about nudists. I wrote about a small penis support group. I mean, there were a lot of things that I wrote about gay men's relationship to their body.
Yeah.
I loved exploring those worlds because I think it's fascinating, and like you said, it's kind of this evergreen topic. Like, you know, gay men can talk about their bodies for eternity and
right.
find something wrong or fun or interesting, and I had fun doing those stories.
Yeah, no, they're fun stories. They're fun stories. Now, talk to me about your love of theater. You are fully immersed in this world of theater. What are some of your earliest theater memories?
You know, I would have to say one of them was, and this is very timely, you know, this Sunday coming up is the premiere of the film version of The Normal Heart.
Yes.
And I remember being in high school, and my late drama club teacher, Marty Muth, gave me a copy of this play and said, "You should read this." And there was a production at the Cleveland Playhouse in this tiny little black box theater. And back then, I didn't quite connect the dots of what she was saying to me, but mm-hmm. now I do, and I really do credit her with sort of planting that seed of love of the theater, and also just sort of encouraging me to go to this show because it is such a great play. It's such an important play, and it's an important gay play. And I think after seeing that, I still didn't quite understand why that was so important, but now that I do, so many years later, I that is one memory that for me is just filled with a time in my life where I realized that I was gay and that theater can be this transformative place for people to experience love and pain and sadness and all these things in such an immediate way.
Yeah.
I would have to say that The Normal Heart at the Cleveland Playhouse in 1987 was probably one of those light bulb moments for me. And also, there was a production of Hamlet at the Great Lakes Theater Festival, as it was called back then, in Cleveland, where Ophelia came out and she'd already gone crazy and she was about to jump in the river. And I remember just looking at this and going, this woman's like blouse is coming undone. What's happening? What am I seeing? What is this, like, what's happening in front of me? What is the story being told? And for some reason, that image of Ophelia going crazy on stage, and I was still in high school, and I thought, wow, if this is what theater is, I want to be a part of this world in some way.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, how does your job, you know, work? Do you just go to a ton of shows every time something comes out?
I do. I try and see as much as I can. That's part of my job. It's kind of impossible to see everything in New York just because there's so much theater, but I do try and see as much as I can, probably, I don't know, maybe 3 or 4 shows a week, Broadway, off-Broadway, off-off-Broadway, and just sort of get a sense of what's happening in New York theater. Yeah, that's one of the nice things about my job is that I get to see shows and write about them, and for my job I also blog and I do videos and cover theater for the web in ways that it's kind of a dream job, really.
Yeah, well, we've talked about New York City theater in particular over the past 6 years on the show. And, you know, I was really fortunate to have grown up right outside of New York City and was able to go to just a ton of shows, and our folks took us all the time to shows. And then, you know, got to that point where we started getting priced out.
Yeah.
And now we are where we are. And there is that worry that this is an art form that really is only accessible to a few.
Yeah.
How do we wrap our minds around that?
Yeah, you know, that's a really, really big concern. And I know that there are some theater companies in New York that are trying to take steps to alleviate that, whether that's student rush or that it's, you know, day of show rush. And there are also some theater companies that have partnered with corporate sponsors to ensure that the initial runs of their shows are $20 for every seat, no matter who you are. And, you know, there are ways to get discounts. You have to do a little bit of digging, and there are certainly ways to see theater for cheap, even for free. But it is a concern, especially, you know, when Broadway prices can be, you know, in the hundreds of dollars for a single ticket. I'm really not sure what the answer is. I think for people who are curious about theater, some of the best stuff is actually cheap and way off Broadway.
Yeah.
And I would encourage people, if they can't afford Broadway prices or you know, the higher ticket prices, no matter where you live, sort of to dig around for the smaller companies who are doing something really, really interesting. And that could be as cheap as, you know, a $10 ticket, and you might see something really, really fascinating that in some cases maybe even better than something that you would pay top ticket prices for.
Is there any way we can recapture that feeling of the Rent lottery tickets? Because that was amazing.
Yeah, that was great. I mean, there are Broadway shows that offer lotteries. You can go there, put your name in a hat, and you know, you might be one of 20 people who can get front row seats for a discount. So that still does exist. But those days, I think, are kind of over. But they were good, weren't they?
There was just something so, and in particular, it had to do with Rent. But just, you know, these overprivileged NYU students, of which I was one, just gathering together and feeling so counterculture in standing in line for that lottery, and we weren't at all.
Was that pre-internet?
I think it was pre-internet. We're talking about like 1996.
Yeah, and you know, those are the days when in order to experience New York in some ways, you had to get out of the house. You had to get off. You couldn't get on your phone and do anything. You had to go into these streets and meet people and do things with other people. And now that those days are over, which is a little sad.
Yeah. Frankly. No, I recall that. I recall that. And NYU made us go see, we had to go see, what did we have to see? They made us go see Ragtime. It was part of our freshman year experience. And I thought it was silly. And now with hindsight, and I left after the first act.
Oh, wow.
And now with hindsight, I'm like, what the hell? I didn't need to go to the piano bar that early that night. I could have stayed. And I love that second act. So we all have our regrets, Eric. We have our regrets. Yeah.
Sure, of course.
Let's talk about a little bit of what's out there right now. In particular, Mothers and Sons, and you just tweeted about this, Mothers and Sons putting out their some homophobic tweets as a way of raising some awareness.
Yeah, it's an interesting campaign that they've done. They've also put up signs in the Hell's Kitchen neighborhood where I last saw them, sort of quoting from the play, very sort of openly gay parts of the script. There's a new television commercial that I just saw the other day where they're showing two men kissing, which I'm not sure if I've ever seen a commercial of any kind that really has been that sort of open about its gay content. They're really doing a push, which makes sense. I mean, it is Terrence McNally. It is a play about gay issues, gay marriage, and AIDS. And, you know, Pride Month is right around the corner. So in terms of an advertising push at all, it all kind of makes sense. They're doing it in a kind of an aggressive way, which I think is could actually work in its favor.
Yeah, I got to go see that one. How did our Neil Patrick Harris do?
Well, you know, I kind of keep my opinions to myself, but I will say this. I think he has definitely been the person to see this season. It's one of those shows that's very buzzed about. It's a very beloved show. He's a very beloved actor, and I think if there's one person this season who, or not person, a celebrity this season that people are kind of like, that's the one that I've really got to see, it's him. You know, there's Daniel Radcliffe is on Broadway, Denzel is on Broadway, but it seems like the most buzz has been about Neil Patrick Harris and just sort of the weight that he's lost and, you know, how much energy he goes through a night and how he looks in that sausage curl wig. That's what people seem to be talking about.
Nice. Now, I would imagine Tony Award parties are either really fun for you or not so fun, because I certainly would be turning towards you and saying, all right, who's winning this one?
Well, here's the thing. I'm going to give a very boring answer to this. I have to work Tony's night, so I tend to not to go – I don't go to parties on Tony Awards night, and during the rest of the season, I'm kind of busy, and I don't really go to Tony's parties. So much of what I do is just sort of covering it that I'm – by the end of the night, I'm just tired and I want to go home. I'm not much of a Tony's party person.
There was a lot of criticism when the nominations came out a few weeks ago that a lot of those celebrities, you know, the names that we know and not necessarily names that are just known in the theater community, but a lot of the big name celebrities weren't nominated, and that was a bad move on the part of the Tony Awards. And it was kind of odd criticism to me, because I'm one of those purists, and my naivete always assumes that they nominated the people who were, you know, the best in the parts and not necessarily the big names.
Our theater critic Ben Brantley wrote about that, about how he was very gladly surprised at how ensemble so much of the celebrities' plays were, that in the case of Denzel and Daniel Radcliffe specifically, they sort of blended into the rest of the cast in their shows, and they weren't showy parts.
Right.
And that's kind of a nice departure, is that these actors realized, you know, that it's not about me, which it certainly can be sometimes. It's about something much bigger, about parting. It's about telling the story as part of the ensemble, and I think it worked in those cases.
Now, I'm not going to have you name any names, but
okay.
Have you walked out of any shows?
I'm not going to name any names.
No,
either,
of course not.
I have. Let me think back. I think there's probably only one show that I've walked out of during the performance because I just couldn't take it anymore. But I have left shows at intermission. I'm just going to put that out there. I have left, and this is, you know, over years and years of theater going, I have left shows at intermission because life is too short to sit through bad theater. I'm just going to say it.
And we'll listen to it. If there was one mistake that you could correct with the theater that you're seeing out there, what would you put out there?
You mean mistake in terms of leaving?
Yeah, the stuff that causes you to leave. What could they have changed generally?
Wow. Again, I'm not going to name names. I'm not going to be specific here.
Rhymes with,
But, right. No, I'm not even going to go there. You know, it's really hard to say. I think it's, you know, one of the worst things is well, boy, I'm not even going to go there. just understand that, like, three-hour shows that are self-indulgent and pretentious, and the audience is filled with your friends, make me want to, you know, make my head explode. So that's all I'm going to say about that.
We're going to move on from there. How about the gayest quality show that you've seen in recent memory?
The gayest quality show?
It's This Show Is So Gay. Give us some gay shows that we need to know about.
Oh, wow. You know, just going to Broadway is pretty gay in and of itself. there hasn't been much that's been super gay recently. I'm trying to think. I mean, I recently wrote a piece for the Times about the wigs of the season. It was sort of a visual look at how many wigs there were, the diversity of wigs. And I have to say, the wigs and Hedwig kind of put that over the top in terms of gayness.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a you know, when Neil Patrick Harris comes down and sort of he sat on the lap of the guy in front of me and licked his glasses and just sort of, I don't know, I guess that says pretty gay to me.
A little bit,
yeah. It wasn't me, unfortunately. I would have preferred that, but that's okay. That's
you right. So I wanted a tweet about that if it were you.
I did. Is that gay enough?
That's
you?
Pretty gay. No, that's pretty okay. gay. And what's right. coming up that you're excited about?
Well, I think the most immediate is Kenneth Branagh's Macbeth is coming to the Park Avenue Armory here in New York, and it's this very sort of immersive environmental Macbeth in this giant, huge, cavernous space, and it's going to be very sort of a visceral, like, wet, muddy experience, and you're going to really feel like you're in this castle.
Oh,
and
my.
That there's blood squirting everywhere, and there's sword fights and everything. It's one of those spectacle-type shows that I think is actually going to be really good, because sometimes spectacle can just mean we have a lot of money, but it's not a very good show. But when you've got Macbeth and Kenneth Branagh and the Park Avenue Armory, I think, to me, that's probably one of the shows that I'm most looking forward to, not just seeing, but experiencing.
See, I'm kind of on the edge about that whole experiencing thing. I went a few years ago. I took a group of students down when I was living in Vermont. I took a group of students from Vermont to go see Sleep No More. And I didn't sleep for days. I told them, look, you guys are going to have to drive home to Vermont because there's no way I'm going to be awake enough, you know, at 11:30 to make the drive back. Holy cow, was I awake enough, because that show scared the crap out of me.
It scared you? Why did it scare you?
I'm not so into the part where you're suddenly in a hotel and there's no one around you and it feels like there's an actor chasing you. I'm more of a passive theater goer.
Okay. What's chasing you? Okay. All right.
I just felt like I was between three witches. It was not enjoyable for me at all. I recognized that people were really into Sleep No More. It was not my thing.
Yeah, it's definitely been a big hit. I'm not sure if anyone thought it would be, but it's one of those shows that's gotten really good buzz, and people do like that immersive sort of experience.
No, they're wrong.
Much for you. They're wrong.
Yeah.
Okay, all right. Well, you know, I also write about horror movies. I'm a big horror movie nerd, and I write about horror movies for the Times, but I hate haunted houses. I absolutely hate the idea of walking through some sort of space and people jumping out at you.
Yeah.
No way. Forget it.
Well, especially in Sleep No More, and I recommend – I don't even know if it's still playing. Can people still go see that?
I think it is, yeah.
Yeah. So I recommend that people go see it, except for that one part where you somehow end up and there's just no one else around you and you're not sure if the experience has ended, but you're just somewhere in the hotel.
Right. And some people like that, though. Some people like that feeling of, you know, I'm in control of this story, but I guess you're not one of those people.
No, I'm not. And I would like to again highlight that those people are wrong.
Oh, wrong. Okay,
yes.
Got it.
Just want to put that out there. The other thing that you do that I really love, I love the whole series on posters of theater.
Mm. Yeah, I'm also kind of a design geek, I guess, and one of the fun things that I like to do is sort of see how theaters across the country create ad campaigns, and it's the series called Behind the Poster. You know, because I think one of the challenges for theaters is to sort of say, hey, we've got this great show. You may not know anything about it, but with one look at a poster, it can sort of tell an entire story. And I think that challenge of doing that, of like getting people's attention in just a matter of seconds, is really, really important. It's a really fun series. I try and look at theaters, not just in New York, but elsewhere, who are doing some interesting things visually at the Cleveland Playhouse for a production of Yentl. It was this hat and payas and a ponytail. It was just all this really, really great, simple design that really said, here's what this play is about. It's a fun series that I'm looking forward to doing more of.
Now, how bad is it that I, as a gay Jew, have never seen Yentl?
That's pretty bad.
Okay, just putting it out there.
Pretty bad.
Great.
Yeah.
Wow, you really just didn't hold back on that one, did you?
Sorry. Yeah, no, that's no. That you need to do something about that.
All right. So. All right. I'm on it. Well, finally, make a pitch for all of our listeners. I think in particular, look, when we think about New York City theater, we just think, well, obviously, there are Broadway musicals, and there will be singing, and there will be dancing. But as it turns out, there are all these plays out there that don't even have music.
Yes.
Make your pitch for why we should be devotees of the theater scene.
Well, you know, I would make this pitch no matter where you are.
Yeah.
In New York, Cleveland, anywhere
totally.
Else. I mean, anywhere you go, there's going to be theater. And I would say that it can be a relatively inexpensive way to experience an entirely different world. And, you know, even if you go once or twice a year, or if you go, you know, several times a week, I think it's a way for people to watch other human beings in a small space take you to a completely different universe. And for me, I think there is a lot of value in that. I always go into a show with a very open mind. I'm like, look, I may hate this show, I may love this show, but, you know, I'm going to watch people try and tell a story. And these are live people right in front of me. They may make mistakes. They may fall down. Who knows what's going to happen? But I am willing to go there. And there have been times that I have absolutely gone to heaven at a show. And, you know, one other thing I would say that is a little sort of secret of mine, one of the best times to go see a show is closing night, because by that time they know the show's closing. The emotions are running very, very high. And sometimes people – The actors in the show are like, you know what, this is the very last time I'm going to do this. I'm just going to go there. If it's a comedy, I'm going to just maybe riff or improvise. If it's a drama, you're going to cry. I remember going to the closing night of Light in the Piazza.
Oh, yes.
Which is one of my all-time favorite musicals. By the end of that show, me and the queen next to me, we were just crying like babies. We were absolutely sobbing because we knew that this was coming to an end.
Yeah.
And never to be seen again. And that's one of the great things about theater, is to sit there and just cry and realize, you know, there's something human, there's something emotional happening here, and I was a mess. And to leave the theater a mess, to me, that's a sign of a good show.
Well, my hope is that you know that your writing just 100% conveys that passion for the theater. And it's just so great to read your pieces and to read what's going on in New York and Cleveland and really all over the country with theater and know, look, there's some passion here and this is something that we should all be a part of because there's great things happening on the stage. It just comes across to everybody who accesses your pieces, man.
Thank you. I really do appreciate that.
So, folks, you can stroll on over to the New York Times and check out Eric's pieces. You can also follow him on Twitter. His handle is Eric Pippenberg, and we will link to that. Eric, please keep doing what you're doing.
I will. And I'll be back in Cleveland for the gay game. So I'm gonna gay it up.
Sounds good to me. Cleveland thanks you.
Okay, I'm glad to hear it.
All right, folks, and we are back. So, roughly once a year, I think to myself, how can I make my life with This Show Is So Gay a little bit more difficult? What guests could I bring on the show that, while very entertaining, are my personal nightmare to edit? Well, there's only one husband and husband comedy team that fits that bill, and that is, of course, Dick and Dwayne. Dick and Dwayne got their start as the late night after show for the Chippendales Dancers in New York, doing a 1960s-style faux lounge act. Eventually, they established themselves in the performance arts and alternative comedy world of New York City's Lower East Side before moving up to more mainstream venues, headlining at comedy clubs from New York all the way to Tokyo and a ton of major gay events. Along the way, they starred in their own theatrical shows. They were performers and writers for the long-running USA Network TV show Up All Night, and they created several television pilots. They're always cooking up something new, and we're going to talk about that. To be clear, they are two of my favorite men in this whole wide world. Dick and Dwayne, welcome back to This Show Is So Gay.
Wow, what a wonderful introduction.
Did you hear the part where you're my nightmare? It might not have been as wonderful as...
Wait a minute. Everybody, stop right now. Nightmare? That's what I want to address.
You are my nightmare to edit.
Yeah, we talk like truck drivers.
No, we talk over each other, I think. Is that it?
That was correct, Dwayne. And I must say, when we last left off our Dick and Dwayne cliffhanger, you, Dwayne, needed to head into the hospital to have some procedures. How, sir, is your health?
Yeah, it's funny you should ask. It was 6 months ago I had shoulder surgery. And this month now, I'm just finishing my physical therapy, and I'm done. I'm out of it. It's over.
Nice.
Yeah, but you know what you're skipping? A week after his shoulder surgery, he developed a pulmonary embolism, and he almost dropped dead right in front of my eyes. And I just got him to the emergency room just in time.
Wow.
And it was amazing to see him in the hospital, because they kept parading doctors into his room that wanted to come see him, because they wanted to see this guy who should be dead, because the blood clot was so huge that they said it would have killed anyone else. But apparently, apes have superhuman hearts.
Wow, Dwayne, you are a medical miracle, apparently.
It's all the love inside of me, in that heart of mine.
Oh, I have never wanted to end an interview so quickly after a statement like that. And yet, so much to talk about, so much to talk about. Now, I must say, Richie, you have been extraordinarily outspoken on many things, but in particular about New York City on your Facebook page and the direction in which New York City is headed. How are you feeling about New York City these days?
Oh, just terrific. It's just the greatest place in the world. And I just,
it's the pits.
It's the pits. And, it's happening. Apparently, it's happening everywhere. It's a global phenomenon. Because when I complain about it, people, write back to me from all over and say it's happening everywhere, that, small businesses, mom-and-pop businesses are being forced out of the business by greedy landlords, and big corporations and chains and banks are coming in. I think that's a terrible thing. I think it's especially bad in New York, because New York has always been such a special place and a creative place, a place for artists and, people that would not necessarily fit in other places. You could always fit in here. And it's just it's been sanitized, and it's been turned into a bland any town. Not interesting for us to live in. And I don't think it's interesting for anyone. I don't know why people keep coming. They're flocking here, apparently. I mean, it's very crowded, but there's nothing of interest here anymore for us.
What about gay life in New York City? How has that changed?
What gay life?
It's not very gay. You know, kind of invisible when we're outside, because it's extremely straight in the city now. And it felt very gay anywhere you went years ago, like in the 90s. And if we went uptown or Lower East Side or Chelsea or anywhere, it was always a very gay city, it seemed. Although, to be fair, we don't go out so much anymore. So
right.
Maybe there are, I don't know, maybe there's things happening in bars or something. But we have a lot less bars than we used to anyway. So many have closed down. Just walking down the street and just being in the city, no, there's no gay feeling anymore.
We were just talking with Eric Pippenberg in the earlier segment about Chelsea and how Chelsea is just a completely different place than it was 10, 15 years ago.
Yeah, we've lived in Chelsea since 1991. And Big Cup becoming a nail salon was, I think, very symbolic. Because you didn't need a nail salon here when it was mostly gay men. Most of them didn't get their nails done, I would say.
Yeah, except for the drag queens.
Except for them, right. Although it wasn't until the earlier segment, and I don't know if you guys knew this, I did not know until Eric told me that Big Cup even served beverages. That's so not why I went.
They had good brownies, too.
We still have a show at the bar Barracuda around the corner, a comedy show, and we were packing them in because we would stand in front of Big Cup and hand out flyers, which were comprised of nude photos of ourselves. And for some reason, those flyers really, really worked. It really got the credit. But if we stood in front of that nail salon now and passed out those flyers, I don't think that we would have that crowd.
I bartended at Barracuda for one night, and then I got fired. But we're going to move on from that story.
Wait, what the hell did you do?
That's not the point, Dwayne. That's not the point of the story. Well, you mentioned social media. I'm moving on, because my mom occasionally listens. You mentioned social media, and certainly folks looking up every now and then. Let's just talk very quickly about your respective social media presences. We'll start with you, Richie. Richie, describe for our listening audience Dwayne's Facebook presence.
He has a large one, but he doesn't use it. Yeah, he has thousands and thousands of followers, but he doesn't particularly post anything. Or
do you feel there is a narrative thread to what it is that he does post? And I will tell you, the correct answer is no.
It's random thoughts that pop into his head. Yeah, no, I've never understood it, actually, myself.
Yeah,
I've never understood anything about him every year.
Good.
So forget social media. I mean, I remember when we first met, he would say things. Sometimes he was just, like, quoting some obscure movie or something, or sometimes he was just making things up, and I never understood, and I would constantly say, what is it you're saying? What does it mean? And he would just look at me, and he got great pleasure out of that.
I'm sure he did. He came out of nowhere and quoted some Mark Cohn song, Walking in Memphis, and it was very exciting, but then it was followed by, it was hilarious. I love the narrative thread. I challenge my listeners to go on Dwayne's Facebook page and try to figure out the narrative thread. I will send you a magnet if you send me an email explaining what you think is happening there. So that's Dwayne. On the other side of the equation, Dwayne, how would you describe Richie's Facebook presence?
Yeah, Richie's a blend of comedy, social commentary, politics, music.
You forgot the sex.
Oh, and sex, of course. Yeah. And sex. Yeah. You know, he's very open on his page. Open as far as, you know, what's in his head and what's in his pants. I mean, he's open. It's an open book.
It begs the question, Richie, and I really have been wondering this. Are there things that you are about to post that you think, no, I just couldn't?
That's a very interesting question, because I was just speaking to a friend about this earlier today, and I told him that I never post really sad stuff in my life. Like if someone, let's say a parent is sick or something, I keep that private. That kind of stuff is private to me, so I don't necessarily like to keep it light, but I tend to keep those things private, the real serious stuff.
Yeah, you're never going to be misery book like
no.
So many people are.
Yeah, I can't stand scrolling through that news feed, and every other one is, this one's dead, and I just broke my leg, and my boyfriend just left me. I'm sure it's all real, and they need to get it out of their systems, but it's extremely depressing.
My personal favorite, pray for me today, I can't tell you why. Well, then no, I'm not.
Yeah, now that's a vague booking.
I'm not doing that, sir.
So. Ken, maybe you could answer this question for us.
Okay.
Because we're always wondering, okay, people love to say thoughts and prayers when someone writes something, that something horrible is happening, or their child is sick, or and they say thoughts and prayers. What does that actually mean? So they're not actually thinking and praying. It's enough just to say the words thoughts and prayers, and then they've absolved themselves of any need to do anything else.
It's not even the people writing that. Honestly, the people commenting. I'm much more obsessed with the people who are putting that thread out there to begin with, because it's just so unbelievably needy. You know, it's those posts where it's like, oh, I'm going to have a procedure today, but I'm not going to tell you what it is, so please send me some thoughts. Or, you know, and I'm always like, I hope the liposuction works out. You know, like, I'm just so not invested for that level of neediness. I feel like when someone puts out a story and they're not calling for that, or they're just informing, hey, you know what, this happened to me, I'm much more inclined to comment, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry that happened to you. You know, like, I hope that you're getting the support you need. But when someone is putting on Facebook, I need you to comment and validate me, that is the quickest way to get me to not do that.
Yeah.
That may make me heartless. Am I heartless?
No. That's called common sense, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, I'm trying to think of what the equivalent was before we had all this. And this is one of those where I just don't think that there was one.
No, there wasn't. It's funny how it's developed.
Yeah.
And this whole phenomenon has developed. Yeah. Social media is a very interesting experiment.
It's unbelievable. Well, you know, that also begs the other question. What did people do before Scruff and before Growler? And I must say, we have to talk about your current project, which I so barely can talk about on this show, except that I'm quasi-obsessed with it. Tell everyone about the Scruff Growler Follies.
For one thing, I personally love the word follies. It's my nod. I mean, that word is just not used anymore. And I love this album I had as a kid, Tony Orlando and Dawn's new Ragtime Follies, and of course the Ziegfeld Follies. So I had to use that word. But I found on these sex hookup apps that people will say some not just sometimes, many times, the most ridiculous things or poor grammar. And I'm a wordsmith, so I will seize on that. And I would much rather give a smart-ass response to someone, no matter how hot they are or how much I would possibly like to hook up with them. I would much rather go for the laugh. And I started just saving some screenshots of them and putting them on my Facebook page, and the reaction was great. And that's when I just got the idea to actually really seek them out. Like, some of them, most of them come from my phone, but some of them come from Dwayne's phone too. And I'm constantly checking to see what ridiculous things someone has said to us on these apps that I can run with. So it's a lot of fun. And I just reached the 250 post mark on that blog.
Very exciting. Now, has anyone ever seen themselves posted or recognized something that they've written to you on the Scruff Growler Follies?
Yes, and they were thrilled.
Oh, good.
Well, actually, it's funny because I didn't realize that many people were aware of it, but guys have started to write to me and say, oh, I love your whatever, and I hope this doesn't end up on your Follies blog. I mean, I keep getting that a lot, and I tell them as long as you don't say anything stupid, you're safe. But there's been a few times that people have said something, and then I said, you do realize this is going on my blog, and I assure them that I always remove all names to keep people anonymous. I think that's only fair.
Yeah. There's barely any of them that I can actually read to our listening audience.
Oh, come on.
No, there are good ones. There's one that's on the homepage right now, and everyone should stroll on over to monkeysfollies.com, and you can check all these out. There's one where someone wrote to you, hot man, feeling frisky, to which you replied, no, I only eat 9 lives, and then posted a picture of the cat.
Mars the cat.
Love it.
Yeah, I've been adding photos lately. That's my new little twist. I think my personal favorite, it was a simple one. Someone said, where are you sexy? But he forgot the comma after you. So where are you sexy? And I said, all over my body.
Nice. Nice.
Yeah, I was particularly pleased with that one. I laughed as I did it.
I would imagine you're chuckling as you write all of these responses.
Yeah.
Now, tell me if I'm getting this wrong. What I gathered from some of your Facebook posts is that you particularly like when people cut and paste these and claim them as their own. Am I wrong in that?
Oh, yeah. I love that as much as when they take our photos and use them on their profile on some app somewhere and pretend to be us. No, I do not like that. I like when they share from my blog, but no, I do not like when they download them and then post them somewhere, and then all their friends think, oh, you're so funny. And no, that's mine. You're stealing.
If I can just mention the extraordinary privilege that you have in doing this in New York City, every time I see one of these, the first thing I think is, you would have run out of people here in Cleveland to alienate.
I never really think about that, but I guess you're right, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
My friend is in Kentucky, in Louisville, and same thing. It's like, I would have been done months ago or a year ago.
Totally, totally. Well, I enjoy it immensely. Everyone should stroll on over to monkeysfollies.com. It's very, very entertaining. All right, boys, are you ready to play our game? We play a game every time you're on.
Yeah. We look forward to it.
All right. Yeah. Who is going to leave the room first?
I guess I will, right? I did it last time, so I'll leave the room first.
There you go.
You left the room first last time?
Yeah.
You left the room first last time?
I believe so.
You're saying I should leave the room.
Yeah.
I don't care.
Let's have Richie leave the room.
He said who should leave the room, and you said, I guess I will.
I guess I will. Because I did it first last time, so I do it first this time. It's called a pattern.
All right, you ready? I got five questions for you. We'll do five questions. I'm going to make it a little bit more difficult for you guys this time, because you get perfect scores every time, and that's not fun. So you will be playing for magnets, this time not for your fridge, but for some of your fans, so you will be able to give them away on your Facebook page. So let's say that you need to get 4 out of 5 right to win the magnets. I know. Here we go. Here we go.
You're making it harder. All right.
That's what I do. This is your fourth time on the show. You should be good at this by now.
Yeah, but I'm sweating here.
Question number one. Finish this sentence. Dwayne is a natural born blank.
Yeah, you made these harder. Dwayne is a natural born.
Go with your heart.
I guess I'm going to say he's a natural-born comedian.
All right, there we go. All right. Question number two. What was the best gift that Richie ever got you?
Tickets to see Linda Ronstadt doing Songs of My Father.
Okay.
When she did that, was it Must Podium? Yeah, Songs of My Father. You know,
nice. Okay.
Spanish thing. Yeah.
Question number three. Who is your celebrity crush?
You know what? I don't have one.
That's perfectly acceptable.
Okay, I do not have one.
Okay.
I do not crush on celebrities. No, I got this thing about celebrities.
Okay.
Okay.
Question number four. Who is Richie's celebrity crush?
I have to say he doesn't have one.
Okay.
I think we feel the same about celebrities.
We're going to see. And question number five. Who is Dawn's celebrity crush? Dawn, listeners, is their cat. Who is her celebrity crush?
Okay, it's Morris the cat.
There we go. Okay, you may call your partner back into the room.
Okay, hey, Richie, I like this game. Yeah, it's challenging now. Yeah.
Well, is it the same game we usually play?
It's the question.
It got harder. It got harder.
Yeah.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Do I leave now, or do we go over?
No. We're going to go over it together. Just don't feed him any answers. All right.
Okay.
So it's a little bit different, Richie, because you guys have won this every time. So I needed to make the questions a little bit harder. You need to get 4 out of 5 right, and your partner did not make that easy for you. Let's start with question number one. Finish this sentence. Dwayne is a natural-born blank.
Oh. It has to be just one word.
It does. It has 4 syllables.
Four syllables?
Yes.
Okay, moron is only 2 syllables. So, 4 syllables.
He agonized over this. If he's sweaty right now, it's because of this question.
Wow. I said the same thing. Wow. Wow what? When you came up with it?
I came up with it, yeah.
No, what did you say wow about?
The question and trying to think of the right answer.
I have a bunch of answers, but
yeah, I do too. I do too. But what's the right one? What's the ultimate one? What is the one that I chose?
Oh my gosh! With 4 syllables, you don't know any word that has 4 syllables in it. This is mind blowing. You cheated. He helped you. Use the thesaurus.
I love that our listeners at this point are like, "Oh yeah, this probably is a nightmare to edit."
Dwayne is a natural born.
I'm going to give you one more hint because I like you guys.
Okay, please. Thank you.
I should probably decide on what the hint is. We'll give you the first letter. The first letter is C.
C? Oh, I almost said something that got you in trouble with the FCC.
Oh, what was it?
He cooks. He cleans. He drives the Jeep.
It's an experience that you two share.
Experience we two share? Cat lover.
I'm sorry. The correct answer is comedian.
Comedian. Oh, and that's what we're a comedian.
That's okay. You have 4 left. Yeah. You're going to get the next 4. You're going to get the next 4.
Yeah, you're kind of funny.
All right. Question number 2. What is the best gift that you, Richie, have ever given to Dwayne?
Best gift I've ever given to Dwayne?
Yes. He said this one without hesitation.
Really?
And it wasn't like something cheesy like your love.
Was it like tickets to Linda Ronstadt concert?
That is the correct answer. When was that?
In the 90s, when she was doing her Mexican
tour. I love it.
Yeah.
I
loved that album, and the show was sold out, but I had bought tickets and he didn't know, and then we went to dinner. I purposely arranged for us to go to dinner at the Stage Deli around the corner, and then we were going home. I said, let's take a walk down the block and just take a look in the theater anyway. And we did, and he's getting annoyed. Why should we look? We don't have tickets. And I pulled him out of my pocket.
All right.
That was fun.
Love it. Good one. You're going to get 1.5 points for that one because that was a hard one, and that was really random that you matched that.
Oh.
Question number 3. Richie, who is Dwayne's celebrity crush?
He hates all celebrities.
That is the correct answer.
Oh, really?
I'm going to stop you right there. Very good. Question number 4. Richie, Who did Dwayne say is your celebrity crush?
I'm kind of like him, though. Celebrity. Is it a male or female? I don't have a celebrity crush either.
That is the correct answer. That is the correct answer.
I was going to try to pick one.
I'm going to stop you so that you get these right. Okay, and then here it is. Here's the deal breaker. You get this one right, you guys win the magnets. Question number 5, Richie, who is Dawn's celebrity crush?
Dick and Dwayne.
Oh, I'll give you another chance. It's more species specific.
Birds are her celebrity crush? By the way, I don't get it. Celebrity crush.
More feline specific.
She's a cat.
Yeah. Tweety Bird?
Has there been some role reversal since we last talked?
Yeah, right,
because
oh, but Ken, that's our little secret. People don't realize that a lot of times when I write the stories about the ape, sometimes it's actually me and I just switch the name.
Nice.
More consistent that way.
Okay, so
listen.
Feline
okay.
Action.
So she wants a female cat.
Because she's frisky.
Let's just say that she wants another cat, and you just cheated there, by the way.
Mars, the cat?
That is the correct answer.
That is?
Yes.
Oh, Dwayne, that is so dumb.
Look, we were just talking about it. It's on the mind. It should be easy. That's a no-brainer.
Yeah, but wait, you come up with, you don't have a celebrity crush? You could have actually come up with some names that could have been funny.
No.
She came up with no I would say she doesn't have a celebrity crush either. She's just like us.
I'm going to go ahead and subtract a half point for lack of originality, but you still have 4, and the Linda Ronstadt pushed you over the top, so congratulations. You have won this version of our game.
Oh, thank you.
What do you guys got coming up that we should know about?
Our web series. We were going to get started on it last year, but we both had those back-to-back rotator cuff surgeries. So
yeah.
We're shooting with that. And we're going to start now, and that's what we're most excited about.
Nice.
And it's going to be called I Love the Ape, just like I Love Lucy, but it's the Ape.
Perfect.
Ape.
Perfect.
That's his nickname.
Well, everyone can stroll on over to Facebook, type in Dick and Dwayne, and follow you guys there. They can stroll on over to monkeysfollies.com and see all the fun things that are happening there. You, too, may have been alienated in your advances on one of the guests on tonight's show. And you guys, you obviously have to know at this point, years and years later, that I adore you both.
Seriously, the feeling is mutual.
Yeah,
it really
it is.
We adore you too.
Well, I will get those magnets out to you. You guys, be well, and please keep us laughing.
Thank you, Ken. You too.
Thank you, Ken.
And, you know, grow this show so that you can have us back on and, you know.
I'm not opposed to this plan at all.
And you can be our celebrity crush.
Yeah.
Oh.
Totally.
Yes, we don't.
As long as you wear your fighting shorts.
Come out, I want a monkey around. Come out, I got a monkey around. Come out, we're gonna monkey, we're gonna monkey around.
Ooh. All right, folks, that about wraps things up for this week's episode. Our huge thanks to this week's guests. Our thanks, of course, to Eric Pippenberg over there at the New York Times. Go read all of his theater-related articles. And, of course, our thanks to Dick and Dwayne, the only husband and husband porn comedy team that entertains me like they do year after year after year. Just love them. You guys, you go get out there. Go use your voice the way you know how to use it best to make a difference for your LGBT and ally brothers and sisters. I don't know what it is. I don't know how you use your voice most strongly. You do. But go out there and do it. Whether you are hosting a comedy show, whether you are writing articles, whatever it is that you do, go make a difference. And, of course, while you're out there making a difference, please remember, why be gay when you can be so gay?